I was going to say save it for speak pipe, but I cut myself halfway through. So Ennis would just save it, mate. Just save it. Go on, jog on, jog on. Put a cork in it.
Put that Pinot down and grab that Tremlett's bitter now.
Let's not put that in. Sorry, don't put that in. That was a terrible decision.
And welcome to another episode of the Neutral Cider Hotel podcast. My name is Gabe Cook, or Dave Cock, as someone called me on the phone the other day, which was, I know, which it wasn't entirely expected. I have been called worse, let's be fair. He did apologise profusely.
Gabe, give us a bit of room to breathe. Usually you say, but first, you can't just open with that. All right, now you can go. Come on, go. Well,
so, as I was saying, Gabe Cook, definitely not Dave Cock. Yeah, and this is the Neutral Cider Hotel. Welcome, everybody. We've got, we're going to have a lot of laughs, as you can tell. Coming up a little bit later on the show, we'll be speaking with Matthew Curtis from Pellicle Magazine. We very, very entertainingly had Johnny Hamilton, his magazine co-founder, a few weeks back. So it's great to have Matt on as well. And we will be sampling Pilton Cider's Fox, Dog, Cat, which has been blended with the fair hand of Neutral Cider Hotel's very own Mr. Martin David Goodwin Sharman. Very excited to be trying that. I have not tried that yet.
Oh.
And we will also be getting our game on. That's right. Producer Scott has managed to scramble around in the cupboard and pull a little game together. But first...
Oh, here we go.
I wanted to give thanks, really. We discussed a few weeks ago about the issue that I've been having with ciderology in the USA, in terms of the fact that there seems to be a delayed ding. There we go. Better late than never. And, in terms of there being challenges of there being a lack of demand and, my book just no longer being economically viable, apparently, on the other side of the pond, and I've had some very consoling words, which has been appreciated. So thank you. And from my fellow co-host and producer, Scott, thank you very much for your, they weren't really kind words, were they, really? Let's be perfectly honest. Just very, very gentle, loving mockery. And that's exactly what I needed. But, out of all of these bad situations, a exceedingly random silver lining will emerge in the form of an email I got just the other week from a gentleman from who's a really key member of the slow food movement of a European nation, to say that he wished to create an edition of Ciderology by Gabe Cook specifically for his nation. Ladies and gentlemen, that's right. My dear friends in Italia, very soon you will be able to purchase Il Mondo del Sidro. That's beautiful. Right. That is right. A wow. Fully Italian version, Italian language, fully translated, with a whole new chapter all about the amazing burgeoning cider scene that there is in Italy. I do wonder why they didn't call it, Ciderologia, possibly. But,
I want to suck your blood, Ciderologia. Why is that like a Halloween figure? What was that?
That's my Italian accent, Ciderologia.
The publisher goes, Gabe, we need to pull this back.
I haven't actually got official confirmation from the publisher, but I should be announcing this. But I'm going to roll with it anyway. Come on, people. So for all of the fans in Italy, hi. And please do purchase Il Mondo del Sidro. Coming.
You're not going to say that very often, I have a feeling.
that might be the last time. As one door closes, another one opens, and that's that's what's happened to me this week. That's literally been the major highlight. So there we go. Done. I'm just going to be rolling in the Benjamins from now on, or rolling in the Lira. Oh, no, they don't have Lira anymore. It's not 1999. That's right.
Congratulations, Gabe.
Thank you very much. So that was my week. How are you guys doing?
Good. I just wanted to jump in for this. Usually we have questions at the end, but it's kind of important to my story. We were asked on Twitter by Wilding. So he said, thanks for the mention/confusion with Wild Insider. Why do you think...
You said Wilding.
Oh, fucking son of a bitch. Oh, I see. The both of you guys... All right, so Wildling, the guy with the has he got short arms or long arms?
You made it up. You
did. Yeah, he hasn't got any arms. He's lost his
again,
arms.
Again, I'll accept my check for this weird advert in the post in the next few weeks. But Wildling said, thanks for the mentioned confusion with Wilding. And I've done that again. But what do you think is the best branding of any cider and why? You talk about it a lot. Curious. So I just wanted to ask you quickly in like a sentence or two, guys, why is branding important for you? Because we have addressed it a lot. But why is branding important for you? And is there anyone with like a good label or a roster that stand out?
I mean, branding is important. I think... It's specifically in cider, probably because of what people are used to in branding in cider, which is the kind of sort of farmyard, old school tractor, Somerset imagery, which brings to mind a specific type of drink, which might not be that contemporary. And it's just, you've seen it in craft beer, how important it is to catch people's eye, really. You know, the more cider that goes on shelves, the harder it's going to be to set yourself apart from what's there. And good branding and it goes a long way to getting people's hands onto your bottle before others, really.
Well, who's set themselves apart for you then, Grant?
Little Pomona, definitely. You know, I know they seem to get mentioned every time we get a question about who's sort of setting themselves apart, but it's, yeah, I think, and what I think that's really clever is that their labels all sort of stand out, and they're all different and interesting, but there's a thread running through them, which is Little Pomona, the little girl. So yeah, that they would get my vote.
Perfect. And for you, Gabe?
It's absolutely crucial, isn't it? Probably more so now and for cider in terms of branding and appealing and labeling, because it's not just like you're a beer and trying to shout above other people. You're trying to quite possibly change a whole preconception of an entire drink before anybody's even got to the liquid. And that's what good branding is all about. It's all about storytelling, engaging, and like, you know, trying to win you over as a consumer to grab you and to draw you in so that you'll at least give the liquid a go. So it's just so important. And you know, following on from what Grant was saying about moving on from the tractors and the apple trees and those kind of things, that's not to besmirch and say that a tractor is a bad thing or an apple tree is a bad thing, but the consumer is maybe a little bit more, you know, it's a bit more sophisticated, a bit more intelligent than you give. You know, with a wine, you don't have to have a picture of some grapes or some vines, or you don't have to have some barley or hops for beer. Some do, and that's fine, but you can tell a different story and you can take people on that journey. So, you know, I like Martin Barclay from Pilton for his playfulness and his creativeness. Pom Pom, just the idea and the creativity of the you know, the gold circles ever decreasing in size, telling it, you know, one just being like an orb and one with the logo and then one with the sort of, you know, the beware of pregnancy symbol in, just playful, fun and creative. And if you're interested in actually utilizing the label as quite literally as a canvas. Check out Loxley cider. I don't think we've mentioned Loxley on the show before. And you know, the artwork has been undertaken by an artist called Brian Grimwood, who's who's a fantastic British illustrator and artist. And so it really is a combination of art and cider together. In fact, Loxley did this fully immersed sensorial activity at Hawks 18 months ago, whereby you go into a booth and there was a piece of artwork and you'd have some headphones on, you'd listen to a piece of music and you'd drink a particular cider. It was all rather fun. So yeah.
Perfect. Well, I mean, for me, the one that I immediately think of for branding is Tom Oliver, for how shit it was to how cohesive it is and in line with what the product is. So even though it's just text on a label, thank fuck that is the case. And I think it's stunning. But it's interesting that you bring up Pilton, because I was there doing, we were blending up stuff again the other day, and we were talking about branding, which is why this question came up at the start. But usually what happens is you kind of Google possible names to kind of check them out. I think a lot of people do. So say Two Rivers, we've done a cider called Two Rivers at Pilton. So Two Rivers cider, you'd Google and like try to find combinations. But he thought of a really good phrase and he couldn't find the cider, but it had a different connotation, which he didn't know. But the reason I brought up Google, I hope he didn't Google search it. He thought bareback was a great idea. I'm going to go check that on Google, see if there's any bareback. And he said to me and Matty, were there like, did you know what that was? I was like, yep, don't call a cider bareback. And it links to Tom Oliver as well, having his latest cider be called Lubrication. I was like, Jesus, a multi-pack of that. Fucking hell.
Lubrication, a juicy cider. It's I know. Wow. There we go. We'll see how it goes. Well, this is Martin. This is where your role in the cider industry is absolutely crucial. Ensuring that cider makers do not make ill-advised branding decisions, or if you don't like them, advise them to do it. And hey ho, let's see what happens next.
Bareback doesn't get cider shit's seal of approval. Like, what world do we live in? Oh my god.
One where laughing is terribly, terribly important, especially right now. So, well, Martin, well done. Thank you for all giving us a good Google there. Grant, what is your week held?
Well, someone in our family had a big birthday yesterday. Our daughter Sula was one.
Hey.
So congratulations to congratulations to Jay and I
for to Jay, possibly.
Well, definitely more so than me, but you know, Sula didn't really have much to do with keeping herself alive.
Any of the planning
in the first year.
She a bit lazy.
Yeah. So yeah. So, she is not lazy. I wish.
Especially when George Michael appears on YouTube, yep. She becomes quite active.
Specifically, Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go. Wham. Oh. Yeah. So we all had.
How many times do you think you've heard that song in the last month?
In the last month. I mean, it's daily. And usually only once. We try and keep it, you know, like, don't want to just plonk it in front of the telly. But yes, it's at least once a day.
It might be a part of like object permanence, where she's getting used to surroundings, and you and George at that time kind of have a similar look. It might be a kind of like, oh, Dad's on the TV.
You've got the white t-shirt on as well, Grant. Yeah, this is very true. I hadn't seen this.
We did all get Choose Life t-shirts. And
cute.
Yeah. And we realized that just before bedtime, oh, we've not actually put it on for her yet. So we had to put it on. And that made our night. So that was the big news from me this week.
Oh, congratulations. Thank you. Well done. And producer Scott, you have apparently even more than one item to discuss with us. What's going on? Like, it's turned into the Scott show. Me, isn't it? Jesus Christ.
It's Scott and the Pom Boys.
Yeah.
So last week on the show, Martin had brought up in conversation as an aside, but he made the statement that he was now going to declare himself the periologist. And so
I didn't remember that. I was like, what have I done now?
In pursuit of that goal, I wanted to at least let him know that I've gotten a hold of the handles on both Instagram and Twitter for the periologist.
God,
so when that career starts to take off, you're set on social media.
Well, there's a publisher in Italy who's been after me for weeks now. So, yeah,
we'll get in touch. Periologia.
Periologia. Periologia del mondo. Si. To the nation of Italy, I am truly, truly sorry.
Please publish his book. Yeah. Scotland, you're off the hook. It's Italy this week. We're going hard.
Tune in next week to see which nation we grossly offend.
Oh, thank you for doing that, Scott. Like, at least
I'm looking out.
At least when I don't do it, I can look and go, oh, I should have done that. So thank you for
just add it to the list of things you wanted to do but never did.
Oh, God.
And then the other thing is, this is a show announcement. We now have voicemail for our listeners.
Whoa. My G.
So I've set it up. It's not even, it doesn't even require a phone. You can just do it on your laptop or computer. We'll put the link in our show notes, but it is speakpipe.com/neutralciderhotel. And you can leave up to a 90-second message for us. So if anyone wants to call in and leave a message for us.
Wow, we are opening up Pandora's peri box right here. This is going to be...
Pandora's pipe. What's
what's being tamped into it? Goodness
also,
me.
How much time is Martin going to spend on that website putting on voices?
it's Tom from Wildling here. Wildling.
He doesn't even know the name of his company.
I can't hold the phone because my hands are too small.
I can't remember. You know your brand of comedy is good when you don't even have to make the jokes. You're making the jokes from me to you, and you're laughing. So I'm sad. Sorry, Tom from Wilding, but we'll sort it. Oh, it's Wildling, isn't it?
It's Wilding.
You know what? Move on.
Yeah.
Wow. SpeakPipe, everybody. Please, please do leave your messages. We are going to have a lot of fun with that, I suspect. That's really great. Well, there we go. Let's see, everybody. Tough times, but we haven't lost our sense of humor, or at least a sense of the ridiculous. But that is our inane rambles for this week. Now it's time to clip on our press credentials, get into the fray, and see what's happening in the news. Okay, so now it's time for this week's news. I'm going to kick off the big news, the only news. We're going north of the border. The Caledonian Cider Factory has put up an image of an empty tub of cider. The cider's been moved into another vessel, but with lots of twigs in the bottom. That's right. It's Ooh. The new edition of the Cruvlan is on the way. It does look, I'm looking at the image on Instagram right now, it's a bit like one of those sort of pentangly things that were created in the Blair Witch Project, sort of hanging from the tree. And, well, you know, sort of, you know, the Black Isle is a little bit so inclined. But this is very exciting. And to actually see, and they are indeed a lot of twigs
did he,
in the bottom of the barrel.
Did he put which variety of tree the twigs are from? Or are they a single variety?
He did not.
He didn't, did he?
No, he did not. No. No.
Missed the trick there.
No, I want all the details, but just very, you know, that was one of the best ciders I tried, certainly in 2020, the previous vintage. So very exciting. He says out in April or May. Looking forward to getting my hands on that. So there we go. So that was that's. You know, quite significant with our dear friend Ryan north of the border up in Scotland, up on the Black Isle. We've also going on the other side of the world, we have, there was an article in, well, foodnavigatorasia.com, as it happened, regarding a Japanese cider producer called Vanvi, the proprietors of which I had the opportunity to meet a few years ago whilst gallivanting across Japan. And they're doing a big push. They're a winemaker too, but they're really advocating the opportunity that cider can provide for wine drinkers in being a slightly lower alcohol. I've gone a little bit Swedish.
Would you like the alcohol?
The alcohol.
Is my cider cold or fizzy with the alcohol?
Oh, dear. Save it. Right. So
Did you just say save it? Like, fuck it.
Save it for the interview.
I was going to say save it for SpeakPipe, but I cut myself halfway through. So Ezra, just save it, mate. Just save it. Go on. Jog on. Jog on.
Fuck it up, Martin. Don't you make a fucking joke.
Put a cork in it. Oh, dear. Apologies, Martin. That was very rude of me. Don't save it. Just spread the love. So the opportunity for Japanese cider, predominantly within that own market, because it is kind of tiny over there, but growing. And, you know, there are advocates. Good old Lee Ree from Insider Japan. He's doing a really big drive to ensure that Japanese cider is known on the international stage and is helping ciders being imported into Japan too. Big shout out to the Full Monty as well, which is a great cider pub in Yokohama as well, stocking a fantastic range of ciders. I think they've just got a load of Ross and Wine there. Amazing to think that that's traveling all around the world. So exciting to see cider's growth and its enthusiasm all over the world.
Hey.
All right, that's it for the news. That's going to do it this week. Coming up, our chat and tasting session with Matt Curtis from Pellicle Magazine. So now it's time for this week's interview. Martin, please introduce this week's guest.
So our guest today is an award-winning freelance writer and photographer who made his name with the wonderfully personal exploration of beer at totalales.co.uk. He was the UK editor of the legendary Good Beer Hunting and is currently the co-founder and editor-in-chief of the wonderful Pellicle magazine. Checking into the hotel, it's Matthew Curtis.
Yay.
How are you doing, Matt?
I'm grand, thank you. Up here in Manchester, it was a bit warmer today. I went out and bought a coffee for myself. That's something I've been doing recently to feel normal, to feel wow. human. Can I have a coffee, please? Like, really? Just one coffee? Is that you don't need to supplies? No, I just want a flat white and I'm going to drink it while I'm walking down a quiet street so I feel like I exist in some sort of real world. And it works for like 10 minutes.
I'm still not connected to the outside world in that level of like just returning to normalcy. And in fact, I think I'm a bit overly anxious maybe, but definitely anxious with the news that we're going to be opening up soon. Like my immediate thought was like, I don't want to go back to normal. And I was like, oh, that's it intrigued me. I thought I'd be surprised, but I'm looking forward to comforts like just getting a coffee, popping in for a beer, but I'm eager to open my fucking bottle.
Yeah. There we go.
Very well done.
There you go.
Grant, yeah. Do you have your bucket?
I don't. This is not going to go well, man. Is it?
Hang on. No. This is my cider. This is fine. This is fucking stable, mate.
I dropped it, though. That is the
oh, yeah. No.
Come on. Ready?
Yes. Well done, Martin. Thank you.
Yeah, this is my very first taste of Fox Dog Cat. Bravo to you. And who's the other guy? Martin. Yeah, the other Martin. The inferior Martin with an I rather than a Y. Okay. I've written down three words. They're more than three words. Fox dog cat. Orange zest, nutmeg, chewing tobacco.
Well, that's actually what we put in there. Yeah. So
I thought it was a, you know, one of them flavored ciders.
There's no subtlety in this. No, this one came about, we were doing a blend for another cider, Two Rivers, which was a small, 330 mil, like nice table cider, 6% kind of thing, really clean. And we were talking about different varieties of apple and everything and like what could be a good kind of single variety. And Jonagold isn't a cider apple, so it seems odd for Martin, who's in the home of cider apples of Somerset, to be like, oh, let's do this. But we tried, there were two separate vessels that we had of Jonagold from 18 and 19, and they were both tasting so clean and just fragrant that we're like, oh shit, let's marry this up. So this is 25% Jonagold 2018, 25% 2019, and then there's it's like 9% Isla barrels, then it's a blend of neutral barrels at 13%, and then 28% of it, looking at the numbers here, is keeved from this vintage. So this is it should be a nice clean one with a bit of tannic edge and a bit of smoke. But Matt, what are we thinking about Fox Dog Cat?
I'm really enjoying it. I got, when Gabe said nutmeg, I'm like, ah, because I'm like, what's, there's a clovey note to it. And I think that might be coming from the Isla barrels, which are really subtle. Like, it's not smoky. It's not phenolic. It's, what is it, 5.5%? It's that, got that lovely sweetness in the middle, and I love the way it dries out, and the tannin just bites for a second, then it sort of whispers away. I opened it before I came on because my partner Diane like really wanted to try it, Pilton ciders in general I've been enjoying immensely. They are some of my absolute favorites since I learned more about keeving. I find that kind of technique is, makes ciders that I really love, that slow fermentation. So I'm having to pace myself. And I just want to say on the name as well, I don't know if this is complete coincidence, but I always listen to your lovely podcast on a Tuesday when I'm out on my run. And there was like, you asked a question to Colleen at Dutch Chicken about merging three animals. And she said fox, dog, cat. And I got this in the post. And I'm like, hang on. What's going on?
No sense of it. She had no idea. And I mean, you can hear it. That's the edited bit. There's about 20 minutes where we're like, Fox, there is a cider called that. And she's like, no.
I know. Completely thought we were taking the piss. We're like, no, this,
yeah.
It's coming out.
No, really. It's very timely. It's very topical.
It was like that day or that week that it had come out as well. And you couldn't really,
it was that Monday.
You couldn't really avoid pictures of it online. And yeah.
We've all been listening, obviously, to the Pellicle podcast and paying particular attention to the episode that you undertook about cider, because
caused
a little bit of let's find out, did it? And it was, you know, this review on an article that you wrote, was it October 16?
Yes.
I think for Good Beer Hunting.
No, it was for Total Ales. It was a self-published piece. The podcast I did, the most recent episode of the Pellicle podcast, which is completely my own project, that Johnny, who's been on the show before, you've heard, lovely Johnny, he's the nice one, and I'm nasty one. Hello, Johnny.
That's not true.
No, it's really true.
Nasty Nick.
It's ask anyone who's been edited. And in fact, Dave, you...
I thought you had a surprisingly gentle touch, actually, Matthew.
Oh, thank you.
I was expecting something much, much, much more severe. So I think you do yourself a disservice.
Yeah. No verbs, just like really abstract.
So in 2016, I wrote that piece and I got a lot of backlash for it. And because I'd never written about cider before, and I could have done quite an innocent profile of James at Later Peak, which is what the article was meant to be about, but I got stuck in and it kind of triggered my cider journey. I actually, you know, I've gone back and read that piece and I actually think it was quite prescient in terms of what I thought needed to happen in cider. And that's quite close to what I see happening in fine cider or low intervention cider, whatever you want to call it. But I've wanted to revisit it for a while, and I thought the podcast was a really great format. I really enjoy the sound of my own voice, for starters.
Welcome to the club.
And the difference between that article and this episode was that I now know a lot of people in cider, and I've visited cider makers and orchards. I have a much deeper understanding of the process. I know my varieties and my bittersweets and bitter sharps and sweets and sharps. I've met people like Gabe and had good in-depth discussions. Susanna Forbes, Tom Oliver, Felix Nash, people like that have really taken the time to have great conversations with me about cider, which is one of the reasons we do it on Pellicle, because it's fascinating. And more and more I find great joy in drinks that are not just beer, in cider, in wine, in all sorts of different fermentations. And so the desire to speak about cider is there. But I felt from speaking particularly to Dick Withercombe and Kath Potter that there's definitely a need for, you know, talking about things, maybe the elephants in the room, that I felt that when I went to some sort of cider meetups weren't being discussed, but I felt were happening. I think when I shared, this was a real trigger for it, when I shared the Little Pomona story we published, which was written by Nikki Pete, and she did an amazing job. It's such a great story. And I was so excited about this article. I shared it in a certain cider group on Facebook, and people were just like cutting ribbons out of it, and there was envy and jealousy, and you know, it reminded me of craft beer. It's been like that for a while, but like there's an underbelly, and I'm like, I got a little bit down, but I started thinking about it, and like I got stuck in. I sort of processed what I'd seen in cider over the next few years, and actually, one of the things I talked about. The thought for that, which is about cider is wine, towards the end of the podcast and how I don't agree with it, was that was triggered by a question from Grant that was asked in the Manchester Cider Club I hosted. And I'd had a lot of cider then. And I'd after that was over, I was like, oh, I wish I'd said this. So I thought I'd use that chance to say what a more succinct version of what I wanted to say about it. And also, I'm really passionate about cider, and I think my experience with beer over the last decade, that, you know, the great thing is we can learn from other industries, even though the process and the way we make it might not be the same. In terms of culture, there's so much crossover in the Venn diagram, and so I feel like the conversations that I have had from that have been really positive, even with people who I'm criticizing. Have had a much more open attitude to it than what I experienced in 2016, when the attitude was, you shouldn't be writing about cider. You've got no skin in the game.
It's we've had conversations, you know, whilst recording and whilst not recording here on the Neutral Cider Hotel about the different movements and the different voices and the different interpretations of cider. And with, you know, with all sorts of differing kind of outcomes, because cider is in this amazing, exciting, convoluted, challenging, confusing kind of space. And on the one hand, you're so right, cider is cider. And the thing that's going to really take it through is finding its identity and being able to shout about it. Until that point, though, it because of the way that it is predominantly viewed by so many consumers, utilizing, for some people, terminology like cider is wine, I think that on the one hand, it does have potential value in terms of the activities of an organization like that, in being able to reach and tap into a consumer that would never have previously even given cider a shred of a chance. I personally completely disagree with the name cider is wine. I think it should be called cider shares a great deal of similarities to the production methodologies of wine.
Just rolls off the tongue, yeah. I've got the URL already.
Yeah, you don't get that on a sticker.
.com. But you know, so it's I agree with you, but also that there are movers and there are shakers and there are things that are happening that are just trying to up the ante here. And this is one of my classic monologues.
Just waiting for the question there.
No, there wasn't even I don't think there wasn't even a question on this case.
Classic.
I just wanted to say that.
Well, I think it's a key point with the cider is wine thing, and you're right in that that shouldn't be the only summary. But for me, I don't think it is. I don't think it's trying to be like all cider is wine. I think it's just trying to reach part of the market and certain drinkers. And even the fact that we chat about Pet Nat in cider, it wouldn't mean a fuck if it wasn't for wine to have that as an established thing. So it needs to piggyback where it needs to. And even if as purists we go like, oh, well, it isn't and it can stand on its own 2 feet. Yeah, it can. But beer's done this before. It's had the whole thing of like, oh, drink it with this meal, these whole ad campaigns. It's almost like it sounds weird because your podcast, especially, you're like an authority in beer is the kind of view. And it's almost like heed the warning of beer. But it's also a bit like, well, let cider make its mistakes kind of thing.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. I guess one other way of looking at it is there's a lot of people campaigning for cider to be more readily available and to increase the knowledge of cider, but they're all doing it separately. Mm. You've got camera and you've got people who are like camera but don't like camera and they're all doing their own thing. You've got cider as wine. You've got Discover Cider. You've got all these different associations. And it, for me, I think pulling those together to form one sort of thread would be incredibly powerful. Mm. I think the main reason for it as well is because we forget that the person on the other side, the consumer, doesn't really care as like we do. They just want to drink nice cider. And we have to think what's the best way to get them to
pull that Pinot down and grab that Tremlett bitter now.
Oh, that sounds just like one of the Facebook groups. I'm
in
on.
My head, I sounded a bit like Pete Brown. I just sound really.
I think it's important to remember that, like, something new and exciting can be intimidating, and you know we want it to be. To be joyful, I guess the advantage is of being this relative outsider is I get to put my own spin on it. I mean, this is why we've got Pellicle, and we've deliberately been doing profiles of producers. Like that has been our editorial plan, because we're like, who are these people? We must get them out there. They must be known because they're doing incredible things, and then. That's our foundation. And once we have more of a foundation of the people doing the work, then let's talk about the work that's being done and the delicious things that are being made. You know, we've got more cider pitches coming through from, so like Adam Harper Wells, we've commissioned him. Gabe Cook, he's got his first article out next week. In fact, it'd be 2 days. If you're listening to this podcast on Monday, then you'll only have to wait 48 hours to read a fantastic Gabe Cook article on PellicleMag.com.
About the author, Dave Cock is an established cider writer.
Rito.
I mean, I think the one of the best points you made there was this, there's not a unity at the moment. And I guess your experience in beer, and you spoke about this, you know, the not making the mistake that beer did, which is, you know, ignoring the traditional makers that have gone before or not giving them a credit they're due and almost, you know, even further than that, actively pushing them away. Well, I'm just interested what you had beer not made that mistake and craft beer makers and drinkers had gone to the traditional breweries at that time, what would their response have been? Would it have been positive? Could they have pulled together, or would because I'm just saying this from cider's perspective, where I do feel like some of the kind of gatekeeping is coming from the other side of the traditionalists, saying, "What are you doing with our cider? It's not 750 ml format. It's not white." You know, how do you think the that would have happened with craft beer and traditional breweries?
Absolutely. Well, if you think about the breweries that dismiss the tradition, Brewdog are a great example, who stopped making cask ale and made it a big thing. Beavertown and Camden Town, who are now sold out to multinationals, but when they came out as exciting young independents, they deliberately did not make cask beer. Beavertown did for a little bit. I think Camden did for months, and they're both keg producers. But if you look at another example of Cloudwater here in Manchester, they've had a really interesting relationship with cask beer, where they've started and stopped. But if you look to their really modern beers, their dippers, they actually work with J.W. Lee's here in Manchester. They approached them and said, "We're interested in working with your yeast." They're the only brewery that get to do that. And that has developed a relationship between the two breweries, which is very interesting because JW Lees is very old school, established. They've got lots of pubs here. They make bitter and they make mild, and they're very well loved in Manchester. Not actually that known that far outside the Northwest. You know, ask the regular London pub drinker about JW Lees, and they probably might not even have heard of it, but here they are culturally significant here in Manchester. And to see a brewery like Cloudwater go, well, we're going to make a New England style dipper, but it's fermented with JW Lee's house yeast, which is 4,500 generations old. It's never been repropagated. There's a story there and a connection and a chance for shared learning. And that for me is one example of modernity and tradition running together to form something new. Cider's not in this position yet where it's got to a size, this modern wave of cider, where routes to market are being deliberately blocked. And it's absolutely craft beers at this point now.
Gabe's face just went there. Matthew, you might need to listen. What's this, Gabe? Your face just changed.
And let's cut. And now we'll go to Gabe in the studio.
Well, no, I was just, I mean, I was A, thinking about Grant. I was just thinking of any cider maker that I know, the route to market is actually, it's the final piece. It's the bit that is still not happening because cider fundamentally is not beer. Beer has the advantage of being understood and that the opportunity is afforded in the on-trade and in the off to stock a range of beers because there's an understanding of stylization and type and occasion and packaging. Cider, still the cider. And so there is just the opportunity to get a hold of that tap, that line, that one little space in the fridge or on the shelf is really, really tough. And, you know, it's these inherent sort of differences between beer and cider, which makes some of the analogies, I think, kind of challenging because, you know, with beer in terms of the modern and the traditional, it's quite easily undertaken on a process point of view. Modern beer, cask ale being the traditional. With cider, we don't have that, and we're not talking about that. So if you talk about the modern wave of cider makers, the Olivers, the Ross and Wise, etc., you could very easily argue that they are the most traditional of cider makers. Wild ferment, full juice, minimal intervention. And so the narrative between who is modern and who is traditional and what is new wave, it's as much kind of attitudinal rather than kind of like sort of process. So trying to pull that all apart and trying to convey that to the trade and the consumer is really, really tough. And this is, you're absolutely right that it is on the one hand side is amazing advantage that it has all of these different opportunities and voices, but it's also, it makes it kind of more misunderstood. So how do you think that cider can go about disentangling this?
So what you're saying, Gabe, is that cider has modern cider has a lot more in common with natural wine. So cider is...
You said it, not me.
I think thinking about it on a beer perspective, you're dead right. Like, it's arrogant of me to say the distribution's the problem when if a bar has 20 taps and they're all beer, You, the job of cider is to get one tap, right? Wouldn't that be nice? Can we have one? No, that's a beer tap. But you also have to think about that. If you think about a pale ale in its most basic form of water, hops, malt, and yeast, that's, you know, it's traditional brewing. There are a lot of similarities in terms, especially on small scale craft brewing. I think there is so many parallels between beer and cider in terms of mindset, in terms of size, in terms of dealing with distribution, all the behind the scenes trade stuff. I don't think it's all that different. And I do worry, you know, that from what I've seen in the conversations I've got stuck into in some groups is that there is a disharmony in cider. And you're right. I think, you know, it's not just the new guys that need to go, like, we're open to be helpful with you. The traditionalists have to be like, actually, what you're doing is really important for cider. Maybe I throw that back to you. What needs to happen there to get that traditional set of people who've been campaigning for cider for 20, 30 years? How do you give them a bottle of modern cider and say, this is great, but it's not taking anything away from what you're doing? How do you explain that to them?
From the conversations that I've had through researching for my new book, Modern British Cider, coming soon, is on point. The key elements that have come out are the issue that some of those producers have with, firstly, a lack of transparency, or that some modern, what would be considered modern cider makers, and that could be something that is in a larger bottle or a can or a keg, talk about their cider utilizing language which they consider to be fake, or to be misguiding, or to be misleading the consumer. So there's a transparency issue, and there's also something around a price perception. The fact that a cider maker could sell a bottle of cider in a 750 ml for 10, 12, or kind of £15 and be maybe quite phenolic, or maybe have hints of acetic acid in kind of balance, or maybe, I haven't tried one yet, but a bigger bottle that is just downright kind of rank and out there and not good.
Why are you pointing to Fox, like, Dog Cat Cave?
There's a bottle just on the other side of it.
This
it
is lovely.
In that direction. It is lovely. And so I think it's a kind of how has this kind of earned the opportunity to get that price, which is partly down to, you know, maybe the fact that some cider makers want cider to be cheap, to be an everyman kind of drink. And I kind of get that. And that doesn't mean that every cider has to be £10 kind of plus. So I think it's about, as you said, it's about engaging. It's about sort of introducing transparency. It's about trying to say what's happening and why, and trying to bring along for the journey.
No, the quality thing is really interesting because it's happening in all, you know, this is probably maybe where cider can learn from beer, but beer can learn from cider in the way we talk about, it's all about education and quality. Where it's happening for me I started to see this phrase compound drinking, and I just did an article about Gen Z. I don't know if you have many American listeners, but what I'm finding is, you know, my friend Katie Mather and her husband Tom have opened a bar called Corto in Clitheroe, not far from here, and they're going to be selling beer, wine, and cider, and they're going to be doing bottle pours. But they're just one example of a growing wave of little bars. You know, I mentioned Reasons to Be Cheerful near here, and there's one called Station Hop near me. There's the Petersgate Tap, places like the Marble Arch and the Crown and Kettle, where, yeah, there's great beer there, but we've got amazing cider. A lot of these places have got amazing wine, some really interesting spirits, you know, and it's where it happens when you sat in a place like this and one of the owners just comes out with a bottle and says, we're just pouring this for people to try tonight. And it's maybe one sip away from, yeah, we'll get a bottle of that.
Well, look, for me, the most interesting and fun and exciting part about the fact that you know, you've done a podcast and we're doing a podcast is the fact that these lines of communications, these conversations, they are happening. If you hark back to what the world of cider communication was like in October 2016, when you wrote that original article, Matt, I was still in full-time employment, not as the ciderologist. It was just a pretty quiet kind of space. So it gives me so much pleasure and excitement and hope that there are so many exciting things to come for cider, that in the last four and a bit years, so much has happened. What's going to happen in the next kind of four and a half years? It's a really exciting space, I think.
I think you're really right, Gabe. There's, like, thinking back to 2016, there was no one to pitch a cider story like that to. And now, you know, we've got Pellicle, but you've got Birim Collective, you've got Full Juice, you've got Graphwood, you've got Cider Voice, you've got yourselves. Like that, like, I'm passionate about drinks media and good drinks media. And I think it's really exciting to see all these independent voices. Because, you know, if you're making a cacophony, someone's gonna hear it and hopefully someone will listen.
It leads us to the year that's here, 2021. Any good things that you've got coming with Pellicle or any other sort of variant thereof?
Well, I'm writing a book.
What's it called?
It's called Modern British Beer.
You are a truly, truly lucky man, and is duly deserved.
I feel honoured. Thank you. So I'm writing a book for Camera Publishing called Modern British Beer, which is kind of like Thank you. My interpretation of how beer has changed since the turn of the century and why it's really important and why it's really good. And it's basically a collection of short essays about different beers and their influence and why they're delicious and why beer is so exciting. So I'm really looking forward to that. And I've got a little book coming out on April the 8th called The Opinionated Guide to London Pubs.
No bell.
So
I don't have another bell. I'm out of bells.
It's a little guidebook. So that's coming out. Pellicle has got just plans to continue as we are doing. We're commissioning more cider articles. And the interest, our cider audience is growing. And we're just dead excited. We're going to get to our second birthday in May and still have money in the bank. Everything, we generally have about enough money in the bank to do 2 or 3 months worth of operating. But as long as people on Patreon keep subscribing, we get to keep going.
Sounds like something we need there, doesn't it, Scott? Pay your bills.
Yeah, do it. Get on it. Now. Get on it. I'm a big fan. I listen via my proxy in Poland, so, you know, because I'm on the run from the government. Can I ask you a question about the theme tune?
Go on.
Is it inspired by Love is a Battlefield by Pat Benatar? Because whenever I listen to it, I'm like, we are young. Is that true?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I'll find out.
It sounds, it just, the hook reminds me of Love is a Battlefield.
I mean, that's high praise, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, let's give credit where credit is due. It was Billy from Frightened Rabbit who made all the music for the show. So
yeah, I thought Grant was going to go into it and he just went, yeah, fuck it.
Yeah. I'm done. I don't know. I didn't write it. So.
I enjoy the music. I enjoy the interludes.
Well, we enjoy the guests. That's fun. The fun bit. Drinking.
We do.
Yeah, wait a second, Matthew. So do you enjoy the interludes more than the actual content?
he just skips to the music.
You riled him now.
I genuinely listen to a lot of podcasts and I tune in every week. I think it's brilliant. So keep it up. Thanks, like I can't wait to see who you get on next. And
it's a big one. It's a good one.
You've had both pellicles now, though. So thank you for having us both.
From here.
That's it. Well,
Matt, thank you so much for joining us. For anybody who wants to learn more and maybe even like give you some money, where are all the various places that they need to head to?
You can find Pellicle at www.pellicalemag.com or on Twitter at pellicalemag. And everything else you'll find from there pretty easily. But you can click the words, wherever you see the word cider on the site, you can click that and it will show you all our cider articles. Oh. There's some amazing stuff. There's also beer, wine, food. We're in a position where we're able to, thanks to our Patreon supporters, we're able to commission some longer articles and more in-depth articles. And so we're just going to keep going till we run out of money. That's the plan. That is the plan. with Pellicle and publish as many articles as we can and pay as many freelancers as we can to make them. And you can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/pellicalemag and you can subscribe from £1 a month and we really appreciate your support. All the money goes towards supporting our contributors, our photographers, writers and illustrators. And I also have my own podcast, the Pellicle Podcast, where it's just me talking for about an hour. Tune in, Ash, if that didn't sell it to you.
Yeah. Ever thought about a job in sales?
Yeah. I like the way
buy it.
People listening to this podcast going, I don't actually like podcasts anymore, so no.
Yeah. Fuck it.
Yeah, dude, thanks for drinking Fox.cat.
Yeah, thanks, man.
I made it with Bill.
Cider's wonderful. Thank you for sending me a bottle.
Dude, I'm glad to actually, like, I know I'm worried about the fucking opening, but I'm glad that we have this outlet to actually drink and chat the shit with people that are in the booze industry. So thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
Amazing. Thank you, guys.
Cheers, Matt.
Cheers.
Thank you. Well, big thanks to Matt for joining us here at the Nutricider Hotel. What a hoot, of course, as ever. We always have lots of hoots here. And big props also to a fantastic cider, Fox Dog Cat from Pilton. Well done, Martin, and well done, Martin. And if you want to find out more and buy it, make sure you head to www.piltoncider.com. But now it's time for our last segment of the show. And this week we are getting ready to rumble in a new game that producer Scott has put together. Producer Scott, what are we doing? And how have you rigged it so that Grant will obviously lose?
I did not do that.
Right.
I'm giving Grant just as much chance as anyone. Don't worry.
Sorry.
You can't see it, but Grant's face was like, fuck this already. Oh, yes.
All right. So the game is called, Totally Recall.
Oh my
God.
And the premise here is I have gone back through several episodes, going back as far as episode 10, which wasn't included in our best of. Ooh. And I've listened for moments where you guys have said somewhat random things. I am going to play you the lead up to that random thing. And then I'm going to ask you to guess the thing you said right after that lead up.
Oh, jeez.
This is something you said. You should be able to get
sorry,
this.
you guys don't listen to all the podcasts.
We all say a lot of shit. Let's be fair. Come on. And fairly random and spurious. So.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting this game to involve us having listened back to the podcasts, because I'm at a slight disadvantage when it comes to that. I'm a little behind. I've got a bit of catching up to do.
I've just heard your interview with Tom Oliver in the bedroom, guys. Well done. That's the text I got from Grant.
All right. Okay, so the way this is going to work is I'm going to play the clip for the person specifically and then give them a chance to answer. If they get it correct, that's 2 points. If they do not get it correct, it can be stolen by the other two members. You will say, name is buzzer, so you have to say your name first. And if you steal it, you get 1 point.
Oh, this is a really well-structured game. Yeah, this sounds like fun, related to the podcast. Like, oh, come on in.
All right, so the first question goes to Gabe.
Bring it.
We're going back to episode 10. This is our Christmas episode, Gabe.
Ho Ho Hotel.
That's right. The Neutral Cider Ho Ho Hotel. It was featuring Martin Berkeley from Pilton. And I will play for you what you said, and then I will ask you to finish the statement.
Yeah, I am. And I hate to be a Krampus, but you missed the perfect fucking opportunity to say the Ho Ho Hotel. So, I heard you. I thought you were going to say it, and I was like, "Oh, he's missed it." And then you went, "Sienna." hey, Sienna.
An entirely legitimate ragging on my missing out of a classic kind of pun, and maybe I'm only programmed for cider pun. Well, maybe so. I'm all about the cider pun rather than about the festive pun. Maybe I've missed out there. I'm very pun specific, so my apologies.
Okay, Gabe, now you said something right after that. After you apologized, what did you say? And you don't have to say exact. You got to get close.
Oh. Did I say, always look on the bright side of life? I thought that I would have gone in with the obvious cider pun. If I'd said I'm into the cider puns, that's the cider pun.
Up for a steal. Name is buzzer.
whose name is flatulence? Yeah.
I'm gonna say Martin. I'm gonna say he's gonna have a pun with apologies, so apologies, and he's gonna mention the No Apologies campaign.
It was a good go.
Grant, do you just want to take a guess?
Something about the apple of my eye.
Three buzzers. We're doing well here, lads.
Here's the correct answer.
What was the pun? I will self-flagellate myself terribly.
Oh. Right, okay.
In my defense, can I say this is the Christmas episode, right? December yes. was probably at the peak of me feeling the challenging impact of COVID. And self-flagellation was obviously quite
you'd read the Dan Brown book or something like that. That's what yes.
That's right. It's from the Da Vinci Code. That's right.
Son of a bitch.
The monk. What was his name? The albino monk. He liked a bit of self.
And I said I have a name, as in I'm that guy, but you didn't get the joke and you went, quite? And then you moved on. I was like, no, I made it funny. Address it.
Well, there we go. Self-flagellation.
Scott, you came out of the gate with that one. Like that.
That's a great one.
That sets the tone for the whole game. Because we're here going, what cider puns are these? Yeah.
Like I said, it took me all day yesterday to pull this together. But here we go. God. Martin is up next. Here's your question.
And it seems that, you know, being written in the 9th century, that there was a fully functioning cider industry, apples, orchards, apples being grown for kind of making cider. So, and that really does, that sort of intent predates anything that was happening in Britain or France, it would seem. So, go Spain.
Cheers for bringing culture to the drink, guys.
Good work.
Thank you.
That was to the Spanish, not to us.
That is obviously from our episode 15, A Little Bit Brutal with Spanish Cider and Trabanco that you were drinking. What did you say after that moment, Martin?
God. I was like, literally, like, what's the context here?
That's why I played a lot, because I was trying to give you as much context as possible, but I know it's not always helpful.
Thanks for giving us culture. I think I'm going to say something about, I'm going to sarcastically say something positive about Brexit and say that we're going to distance ourselves and we've cut our nose to spite our face kind of thing. Oh, fuck.
Anyone want to steal?
Grant. I'm not going to be able to say exactly what he said, but did he say something offensive about Scotland?
he's pretty polite about Scotland. Yeah,
you're playing the margins game. Yeah, that was totally.
Dave, you want to take a crack?
I don't know. Did he make some joke about the fact that, you know, you just poured your cider all over the floor? Damn it!
Here is the answer, and a very memorable moment, I would say.
Got my £1 million jacket on. Cheers for bringing the culture mine.
That's right, mate.
Big massive £1 million jacket on.
Was that a standout moment? The £1 million jacket?
£1 million jacket?
You guys talked about that for two episodes.
The £1 million jacket? I'd have no recollection of that.
You said that, I think, four times in the episode, by the way.
Scott, I think I'm pissed half the time. you're like this guy's got his signature, and I'm like, my brain's so slow I can't think of the next joke, so I just say the
bonus question you guys can all get. Okay. So this will help if we can't get there. But Grant, this is your time to shine.
Ready.
This is from, which episode was this? Oh, this is from our tomato knives and badminton nets episode. So here we go.
We were chopping up an old badminton net from the summer.
You are so fucking
hold
posh.
On.
Fuck right. off.
So no. hold on. Right. You were cutting a badminton net with a tomato knife.
Fuck off.
Well, I haven't got a badminton net. Who are you? On a tomato net? Yeah. What the fuck? Honestly, I've never heard anything like that in my life.
Well.
All right, Grant, what did you say right after that?
Did I say something about people struggling to feed themselves?
Oh.
And you're cutting up. Yes.
Oh.
you're cutting badminton nets with tomato knives. I still stand
by
that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still one of the most outrageous
Scott,
things
I've
ever
heard.
Can
you give him another positive ding for like actually being right about it as well?
Yes.
I think it's a strong point that we need to...
There are badminton nets across this country that are not getting cut right now.
Give him a buzz, Scott. Give him a buzz.
Uncut.
Here's the official answer.
It is the truth.
People are struggling to feed themselves, Gabe, and you're cutting badminton nets with tomato knives.
It's a new year. It's a new year. It's a new me. I'm cutting my badminton net with a tomato knife.
Oh man!
All right. So we have a game here.
Oh my god!
Nicely done. So Grant has 2 points. Martin and Gabe have 0 points. Cool. Now, this last question is a multi-parter.
Oh,
jeez.
It's all right. Going back to the Simon episode.
I'm limber. All right.
Pretty drunk then.
So that one is called, that is episode 14 called Honk for Salvation, featuring Simon Neal from Biffy Clyro.
Hi, Simon. Because he's obviously listening still.
That's me.
That's me. He said
remember
something.
Me? Honey, I've just been mentioned in a podcast.
So this is a name as buzzer because I'm not going to play a question. I'm going to ask you a question and then it's a multi-parter and you have to answer it. It's worth up to 5 points. So during the interview with Simon, he mentioned the first album he purchased. What I'm looking for is the name of the artists on the song, the album the song appears on, and the percussion instrument
Martin,
used.
The percussion instrument was a Zippo. It was Sting. Oh, I can't remember the artist. It's something like Sting and lead singer of the fucking Rolling Stones or some shit like that. And it is on the Lethal Weapon soundtrack for Lethal Weapon 2.
Oh god, good memory.
Well, you're part right and part wrong.
That's fine, I'm fine with that. Okay, I'll take any point.
You get the correct for
Zippo.
What was it?
Zippo lighter Zippo. For the instrument.
Zippo lighter is correct.
The
and
Zippo lighter.
Sting is one of the artists.
It
on
isn't
the song.
On Lethal Weapon. The soundtrack for Lethal Weapon.
I'm not telling you. I got to wait to see if they want to answer.
Is it? Well, I'm just, Gabe, I mean, I'm just, if I win this, then it's not going to be worthy. Well, would it be The Police and would it be Lethal Weapon 3?
Gabe gets a point for Lethal Weapon 3, but it is not The Police. So there is still a point to be had.
For the other artist.
Yes.
Lethal Weapon 3, Sting. Brian Adams.
Here is the answer. Wrong one. Shit.
Les aigres de les bonbons.
Here's the answer. Here's the answer.
Well, believe it or not, it started with a cassette single of Sting and Eric Clapton. It was a song from Lethal Weapon 3. I hate to say it. And the percussion track, you know, like this, Grant, was a Zippo lighter. You know, it's like, pure pomp. You know, it's so such rich rock and roll guys. Like, let's mic up the fucking Zippo and we'll make a killer percussion track, you know.
Does that make the scores 2-2-2? Is that?
It does, and I don't have another question. Well, it's 2-1-2.
I only got 1 point.
I didn't anticipate. Anyone want to take a guess at the name of the song? I'll just give you the win if you can get the name of the song.
Jezebels of Desire.
Nope.
Staring into the Wind.
I think I know.
Oh.
Because I listened to the episode the other day, and now we know. I can, all right. Yeah, no, I need a drink first.
Come on, Martin. You got this. You got this. You can do it.
Bareback.
Oh my, no, it is. It's probably me is the name of the song. He didn't say it. Okay, you would have had to look it up. There's no way.
What a great name.
All right, so I have failed as a gamer because I did not come up with enough questions. I did not anticipate this. So there's a tie between Martin and Grant.
I'm happy with not being Gabe. I think Grant can speak to that as well.
That was a fun game, Scott. I enjoyed that. Thanks for...
Yeah, no, Scott, that game was good. Like, that was actually...
That was good.
I thought you were going to go for shit that was easy, and the fact that you went for, like, such weird lengths...
I was actually worried it was too easy, and then I was like, maybe it's not. I don't know.
I don't remember that jacket at all.
Well, Grant, Martin, congratulations. And Scott, congratulations to you two for formulating such a well-informed quiz. And I'm mildly disappointed that I didn't win, obviously. But, you know, we've got to share the wealth every now and again. Yes. And I can't cheat every single time that we play. So I'm just going to have to put my big boy pants on and get over it. And there we go. We are at the end of another episode of the Nutricider Hotel. Thanks to Matt Curtis and Pellicle Magazine for joining us. And, you know, if you want to find out more about the amazing cider we tasted once again, check out Fox Dog Cat from PiltonCider.com. And it goes without saying that if you enjoyed this podcast and want to help, please tell all your friends about us. Also, especially if you're in the US, please subscribe, rate and review on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Spotify or your favorite podcast app. Keep coming in with all of your questions. We're gathering them up. We'll have another question sessions coming up soon. Instagram and Facebook, we're Neutral Cider Ho. Twitter, we are Neutral Cider Pod. And you can always listen online and share episodes at neutralciderhotel.com.
Leave the voicemail.
And coming soon. What's it called? Crack pipe. What's it called again? Where do we go? Where do they go? Crackpipe.com/neutralciderhotel.
I hope not. Speakpipe.com/neutralciderhotel.
Speakpipe.
Someone's grand. What's it called? Crack.
Don't Google crack pipe.
Just leave a message. Crackpipe/bareback. We'll get it somewhere. Gabe. What's it called?
Crack pipe.
So speakpipe.com, leave us your messages, and we very much look forward to hearing what you have to relay to us.
What are you doing to my life?
Sound like a whale, Martin. Why are you
saying crackpipe? Oh my god! Oh my god! Okay. Gave you. Oh. I'm gonna set up this new. I'm gonna set up this new voicemail social media service. What should we call it? Probably something catchy like crap.
So good.
And on that bombshell, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. This is the Neutral Cider Hotel. We are checking out, and we will see you next time. Martin's off to the doctors because he can't stop laughing, and we'll see you next time. Cheers. Goodbye.